Hey, we're on the road in Hoover. Arkansas beat Tennessee 8-4 last night at the SEC tournament to advance to the quarterfinal round. They're going to play Texas on Friday at 3 o'clock on SEC Network. Ought to be a lot of fun. Arkansas and Texas at the SEC tournament for the first time. Today's baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a third-generation family-owned business serving Northwest Arkansas since 1976. Just like great baseball programs, H&R is built on consistency, trust, and doing things the right way. No shortcuts and no gimmicks at H&R Tire and Auto. We're also brought to you by Eglin's Best. When it comes to your game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eglin's Best delivers more the nutrition you need with 6 times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit eglinsbest.com for more information. We are also brought to you by Southern Loft. I got to pull up my Southern Loft reader here. I'm on the road, Bubba. It's a little bit chaotic, as you know. Southern Loft's making room for new inventory with their furniture market clearance event happening May 22nd through May 29th. If you've had your eye on new furniture for your home, now's the time to shop and save on stylish pieces of furniture for every room, from comfortable living room furniture to statement dining pieces and more. Southern Loft has options to fit your style and your space. Visit Southern Loft at 3155 North College Avenue in Fayetteville, or give them a call at 479-856-6100 before the sale ends May 29th. If you're watching us on YouTube, we appreciate it. Maybe Facebook or Twitter. We put our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just search Whole Hog Sports on any of those platforms. Bubba, I think you played Texas at the Southwest Conference tournament back in the day. Going to be the first time. They played 20 times in the SWC tournament, but they've never played here in Hoover. Kind of an interesting deal getting these two teams together. I don't think it matters if it's in Austin, Fayetteville, Arlington, Omaha. Whenever they play, there's a lot of people get excited about this.
Yeah, I tell you, everyone kind of looked ahead and they said, okay, if we beat Tennessee, that's the matchup we're going to get. And I think a lot of people are excited about it. I'm pretty sure, you know, we didn't have as many fans last night at the game as I thought we'd have, but I bet you tomorrow there's fans are going to show up knowing who we're playing.
There were a lot of people at the game. I'll say that. You know, Tennessee, they had a lot of people down here. Of course, it's Arkansas's the longest trip to Hoover of any of those teams that were in the night session. There were 14,461 at that session last night. It was the fourth largest session in SEC tournament history. There were a ton of Auburn fans there for that game that they played late against LSU, and then obviously Arkansas and Tennessee played the early game of the night session. I'm with you. I think that, you know, with it being the weekend, with it being a Wednesday night, I think that probably kept some people away. But, you know, Friday afternoon, I bet some people make their way down here and find a way to watch Arkansas and Texas play. I tell you, that game yesterday, boy, the ball was flying out of that ballpark. And you talk to the coaches that have been down here a lot. You know, I was talking to Jim Schlossnagel actually this morning before we started. And, you know, it gets their attention, the number of home runs. And not just the home runs, but the way the ball is really flying. You know, like yesterday, Arkansas's home runs were 421, 432, 434, and 447 feet. There is nothing cheap about that. You know, all those balls were going to go out anyway, but man, it's like a launching pad at the Hoover Met right now, and that's not something we're used to with a ballpark that typically plays pretty big.
Yeah, it's crazy if you think about it. That's 1,731 feet of home runs, Matt, in case you're interested. I did the math last night on the field when we were finishing up the broadcast. But, hey, look, the ball was carrying, but those four balls that we hit would have gone out of any stadium any night. They were absolutely hammered. I really liked the approach we had going into that game against Blanco. I thought we did a really good job with the approach, attacking. I think we knew how he was going to attack us early, and we were ready for it. We kind of ambushed him with a couple of big swings early in the game.
Yeah, as we sit here right now, we don't know who Arkansas or Texas is going to pitch tomorrow, but there's an anticipation that it could possibly be Hunter Dietz against Dylan Volantis. And boy, if that's the case, you're talking about, remember when Hagan Smith pitched against Paul Skeens down here?
Yeah,
and just the anticipation around that matchup. I mean, this may not be at that level. You know, I don't know that Volantis or Dietz, I mean, obviously nobody's Paul Skeens. And I don't think we're trying to put that on any of these pitchers, but if you're talking about Dietz and Volantis, these are two potential first round picks, Dietz this year and Volantis next year.
Yeah. You're talking two big, strong lefties, Volantis 6'6". Two big lefties that's going to, and Dietz is as well, two big lefties that's going to pitch in the big leagues for a long time. So it's going to be a fun matchup. You know, I doubt that the ball's going to be flying it quite as well when those two dudes are on the mound. But it's going to be a great matchup. Really looking forward to that, if that's who they go with. I mean, they've got – what's crazy, they've got two other guys they can go with that really are – they're not the same as Valandis, but they got good stuff. They have a couple pretty good options. That Riojas is another dude that's got really good numbers. So, but I really think Schlossnagel, I think he's going to go with Valandis. I think he'd be crazy if he didn't.
That's what I'm hoping to see. I'm hoping to see that matchup, even if it's on a pitch count. Like I said, you know, it's, and sometimes you'll see, especially both of these coaches, I think we've seen them do that. You know, I mean, Schlossnagel, whether he was at A&M or now at Texas, and obviously we've seen Arkansas do this with their ace down here. You know, you don't stretch them out as far as you could in this one, because you want to have them fresh and ready to go when the regional begins next week. But, you know, even if you get three innings of Dietz against Valantis, potentially, that'll be fun.
Yeah, it'd be three fun innings. You know, when I found out we weren't starting Dietz on Wednesday night, I was like, oh, come on, let's just throw him out there. Let's get a few innings out of him. But Dave had a plan, him and Hobbs, and I think it worked out perfect last night. I thought Tate McGuire came out, gave us three really good, strong innings to get us started. Offense jumped on him early, got out to a 4-0 lead. So I thought that was that was great, you know, to be the team in the lead for a change. It feels like we've been getting behind a lot early. Mm-hmm. So I thought McGuire did a really good job early, just changing speeds, hitting his spots. So it was good to get out to that early lead.
Yeah, I mean, this is just like any other weekend now, or to me now it's the weekend. Yesterday was like a midweek game against Tennessee, the way they pitched it with McGuire and Coyle and DeCrimmer and Gibbler. But now I feel like this is like any other weekend where, you know, you've got your pitching set up to, hey, let's see what happens. You know, again, you're not going to extend guys maybe quite like you would in a, you know, on a Friday night in week eight or something. But you know, I don't see any reason why, if you're Arkansas, you don't feel like you can win this thing now. I felt like yesterday was going to be the hardest game for them to get through because of the way they were setting up their pitching. Right. Now you got your guys ready to go, and I know they've had trouble with game three starters, and they basically haven't found one this year. But you've got this set up to where if you continue to swing the bat well, I don't know why they don't have a chance to win this. Now it's hard to sweep in the SEC, you know, different here than it is, you know, on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, wherever you're playing. But, but the way they're swinging the bat, I like their chances to maybe make some noise this weekend.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to have their work cut out against Valantis if he's the guy they go with. I want to say in SEC only, the league's hitting 197 against them, so he doesn't give up a lot of hits. The key is when you're facing a guy like that, Matt, if he makes a mistake, you can't miss it, because you're not going to get a lot of pitches over the middle plate to drive. Mm-hmm. It'll be a little bit different than last night's game, but I think you know, with Dietz on the mound, I feel like we just the team and as a whole plays better with Dietz on the mound. I think it's a mental thing where they know what they're going to get out of Hunter Dietz, and I think we just step up a little bit and play better when Dietz is on the mound.
I mean, when they lost to Kentucky last week, it was the first time that they've lost with him pitching. Gosh, I have to think through this. I think maybe since the Florida series. I think that was the last time they lost whenever he pitched prior to last weekend. And, yeah, I mean, they seem to have – I think, like you said, they just seem to have a belief and a confidence whenever he's on the mound. When you look at yesterday's game, let's start with Zach Stewart and what he's doing and the, you know, the power he's given them now, I guess, in the cleanup spot. They're kind of moving him all over. I mean – you know, he got on this home run streak at Kentucky last week. I think he's batting ninth, and now he's in the cleanup spot. This is what they brought him here to do. And I tell you, the thing I thought I had yesterday, I was talking to somebody that was sitting next to me at Perfect Game, and you know, we were talking about Arkansas. I said, you know, whether it be Stewart or Pompey or, you know, you name it, it feels like for the most part, the guys they brought in here, they're getting you're going to look at the end of the year and they're going to have given you probably close to the production that you thought they would give you. It just took a long time and it's kind of come in spurts, you know, for Pompey. Would Pompey have like four home runs in six games a couple of weeks back, and now Stewart now 5 and 4 games. It just seems like they're getting the production. It just took a while to get to that point.
Yeah, I think so, Matt. I think you look, you know, it's an adjustment when you come into the SEC, and I think it's taking these guys a little bit longer to adjust. But I mean, they're both good players. You know, there's something about Zach Stewart. I don't know if it's the hair or whatever, but, you know, I was talking about it on the broadcast last night. You know, when you got hair like that, you got to hit home runs. I mean, he just looks like a home run hitter. But I was really, really impressed with the way he got that first pitch. You know, you think about his first two pitches went, you know, combined almost, what, 900 feet.
Close.
And, yeah, I mean, it's you know, sitting on the slider of the first pitch, got it, hit it out. Next at bat, if you're a hitter and you hit an off-speed pitch out your first at bat, it's a good feeling because you kind of feel like, okay, now he's going to attack me with a fastball. And it mm-hmm. looked like he tried to come in with a fastball, and he hit 116 miles an hour out to right field, 420 feet. I think he got cheated a little bit on the distance. But, I mean, that's just a veteran hitter. Phil said how many home runs that gives him in his career is 50-something, which is
57.
Yeah, it's 57. That's incredible. And there's just something about Zach. I tell you what, I love talking to him. And I say all the time, Matt, you could talk to a guy and you could look him in the eye and you could tell this dude's a hitter. And they just have a different look about him. And there's something about Zach Stewart that really, really gets you fired up when you talk to him. I think the players all like him. And if he can anchor up the middle of that lineup, that's huge for us going into this part of the season.
You know, that second home run he hit, it was raining. And I actually think the rain may have knocked it down a little bit, believe it or not. Like if it wasn't raining, I think it would have landed in those trees.
So there's been two balls hit like that this year. Cahill Loy hit one to center. I want to say it was 413 feet of 15-degree launch angle, like 115 mm-hmm. off the bat. That's what this one looked like. It almost looked like a driver. When he hit it, it was low. And it was just backspun. It was still going up when it cleared the fence. If he'd have got under that a little bit, there's no telling how far that would have gone. But when he gets a hold of it, the ball goes. He's a big, strong dude, and when he connects, you know it.
Okay, so you mentioned Cahill Loy. Obviously, that's the concern right now is that he left the game last night. And I asked Dave about it in the post game, and Dave just kind of pointed right there. And that's your hamate bone for people who don't know. And that's a common injury in baseball for hitters. Now, it's interesting to me, Bubba, you know, when I have seen people hurt their hamate bone, it's been when they've gotten hit by a pitch right there. You know, it's like that bone is really susceptible to getting between a ball and you know, where you're gripping a bat. That's not what happened with him last night. But this is concerning. If that is indeed what that is, because, you know, if that's the case, he's not playing again this year.
Right. You know, I hate it for Cahill. You know, he was starting to heat up, but, you know, I've seen that swing before, Matt, and it's not good. I've seen that same injury before, and it typically is a hamate, but when he started his swing, you could see the hand come off the bat mm-hmm. right as he started to attack the ball. And that's a bad sign. I when it first happened, I thought, okay, maybe his hand just slipped off. And then as soon as you could see, you knew something was wrong. And, you know, he's tough. And if he comes out of a game like that, you know, it's something not good. And you hate to see it. I mean, that's an injury that you heard a lot about it in spring training this year. There seemed to be a lot of guys going down right around spring training time in the big leagues with hamate injury. And so, boy, I hope that's not what it is, but boy, it really appears to be.
Yeah, you know, that's the injury that cost Andrew Benintendi his freshman year at Arkansas. He I can't remember exactly when he broke the hamate, but basically, I guess it would have been before the season started, but he was never quite right his freshman year. And then he came back his sophomore year, and obviously, you know, that was such a huge year for him, won the Golden Spikes. If Cahill can't play, how do you think they – I mean, Carter Rutenbar is obviously the one that I think you would want to get in the lineup. But, you know, I've had a couple of people ask me, like, how would they potentially play this? You know, do you move Zach Stewart to DH and maybe get a different right fielder in there who can cover more ground in right field? I don't know how you do this, but it will be interesting to see how they address the lineup moving forward.
Yeah, you got to remember, you got Christian Turner could jump in there also. You could move Christian out to right field, put Zach Stewart at DH. That would be a good option, you know. Or you got Rutenbar that can DH and leave Zach out in right. I think you got a couple different options right there. Look, I've been a Christian Turner fan the whole year. I mean, he's quick twitch. He's had some good at bats for us. I mean, we all know he's had one really big swing this year, and but I do like him, and I think he's got a bright future with the Razorbacks. So he might be a guy that could slide in there, depending on the matchups. I think a lot of it's going to depend, you know, on who's out there on the mound. I don't think they're going to run Christian Turner out there against Volantis. You know, I haven't looked at his splits, but I would assume he's really tough on lefties. So I doubt that would be the matchup. But you know, you never know. I mean, you know, Dave's going to go through the numbers and put the right dude out there.
He's tough on everybody.
Volantis. Yeah,
that guy is. I mean, we talked about him last year whenever they came to Fayetteville. Man, he's good. He's good. Hey, speaking of Fayetteville, I talked to Sausnagel about when they came to Fayetteville last year, and I said, was that a little bit of an initiation into the Arkansas-Texas rivalry? He said, oh, yeah. He said, you know, he'd been here with TCU, and he'd been here with A&M. He said, I forget exactly how he said, but I've never felt quite, he said, let's call it rivalry, that I felt whenever Texas came to town last year.
Yeah, you can call it rivalry, you can call it hatred, you can call it whatever you want, but there's definitely, you know, if you're what, probably 45 and older, you remember the days of the Southwest Conference and you know, kind of the dislike for the Texas Longhorns. That's the thing about these guys playing today, Matt. They don't know, like, the rivalry to them. They don't feel it like I do. But I think when they get out there on the field, I think it comes to life, and they feel it, they sense it in the fans, especially at home at Baum Walker. I don't know if we'll have the same feel here at Hoover, but you know, once you're out there on the field and you hear the fans, you know, it's a big deal to be playing the Longhorns. And I just don't know if we've taught this younger generation to hate the Longhorns yet or not, or maybe it's going to take a little bit longer.
You know who feels it? It's Dave Van Horn. I mean, he lived it as a player and as a coach.
Yeah, you're right. I just remember back in the day, it was just a different feel. You know, back then, Cliff Gustafson was the coach. Just a different feel. We always, even when they came, you know, to George Cole Field, it was different when they rolled into town. And it was always fun beating up on them. So it's something that, and I don't think, you know, a lot of fans will never let go of that past. And so it's always going to be fun when we play the Longhorns.
Going back to yesterday, Cole Gibler, 2 innings. Scoreless. He gave up a double. It was a little shaky there at the start. In fact, I think he gave up a fly ball that went to the warning track, and I thought, oh boy, this may not be good. But he settled down, and he pitched pretty well. And you look at how bad it had gone for him the 3 outings prior to yesterday. The fact that he gave him 2 scoreless, I think, is a positive development.
Yeah, I think so. After the game, I was down on the field, and I actually shook Matt Hobbs' hand and said, hey, I really like those last 2 innings. That was huge. You know, now the 8th was shaky, like you said. I think Pompey bailed him out. Pompey made a really good play going to his left, saved a run. That could have been a difference right there because they had someone hot in the bullpen. I don't know if they'd have stayed with Gibler, but boy, he came out in the 9th. And he had his slider working again. It was really good to see that slider working again. I know in the 8th inning, he tried to land a few changeups, bounced a couple, got behind in the count. But, boy, in that 9th inning, he had his slider going, got 3 ground balls to short. So that was really good to see.
Yeah, I mean, they need him. They need him to be good. And you know, James DeCremer, again, he came in yesterday and gave him solid 2 1/3 innings, 1 run against him. You look at since he came back from that calf injury, Bubba, 4 outings, all against SEC teams, 8 innings, 1 earned run. That's quality.
Yeah, I tell you what, there's something about him, Matt. So I view everything from the lens of the batter's box. You've heard me tell you that before. It's hard to see the ball against the Kramer. He hides the ball really well. And then all of a sudden the ball jumps out at you, and he's 94, 95. He's got a good slider and a really good changeup. He didn't use his changeup very much last night, but he had his fastball slider working. And I think hitters just don't see the ball well against him. It's kind of, you know, his motion is a little bit different. So the way you pick up the ball out of his hand, I think you're late seeing it. And it's huge having him as a piece of that bullpen right now, because he gave us 2 1/3 really good innings last night.
And Dave Van Horn said that they let Parker Coyle down defensively, a couple of errors behind him. Pompey made one. New made one. I have to believe that was a wet ball. I mean, you know, it had been raining. That ball rolls across the grass. I just the way that came out of his hand, it just that looked like a wet ball issue to me. But you know, it ended up costing them in terms of the runners were able to advance. Maybe they both end up scoring on a double anyway with two outs. But you know, it was just a tough inning. And then obviously the pop up where can you even call it a triangle if there were four people running back there?
Yeah, I don't know. That ball's got to be caught though. You know, the inning started off with Pompey. He kind of got frozen. Mm-hmm. You know, there was that's a ball that you either my rule is if it hits in the dirt, you come get it. And I think Pompey kind of froze. He got caught in between, so he got that in between hop. If you step up, you get a short hop. If you step back, you get a big hop. He just kind of stayed in the middle. So, you know, I think it kind of froze him, but if he makes that play, none of that other stuff happens. I think that was a fluke thing with New in center field. I mean, he's you know, I talked to him about it after the game, and you know, he asked me if I'd ever seen a guy throw a ball backwards. So, but yeah, I think it was just he did say the ball was slick. Mm-hmm. But then that pop up, man, that thing was in the air for a long time. I feel like, you know, Zach Stewart kind of took a couple of steps deep into right center. It looked like New was delayed on his reaction. He might have even taken a step back. But boy, a ball that's in the air that long has got to be caught. And these guys know that. I think it was just a bad read.
You typically want your outfielders coming in and catching that running toward the ball, then your shortstop, you know, going backward and trying to make something over the shoulder.
Yeah. That's a tough play for an infielder. That's a long way to run. But but look, here's what I like. You know, we talk about Zach Stewart's home runs, and I think the biggest swing of the bat was Pompey's three-run homer because Tennessee had kind of crept back in the game. It was 5-3. The momentum's going their direction. They were starting to feel good. They were getting rowdy in the dugout, and all of a sudden Pompey hits a three-run homer. And all of a sudden, instead of 5-3, it's 8-3. And I think that was kind of the nail in the coffin right there for Tennessee. But that was, to me, that was the biggest swing of the game.
So I don't know what it is since 2019, but I know since 2020, Arkansas and Tennessee are the two winningest teams in the country in terms of just, you know, number of wins. Mm-hmm. Since 2019, Arkansas is 14-2 against Tennessee. How do you explain that?
You know, I think they just get up for that game. You know how mental baseball is, and, you know, there's something about Tony Vitello being in the other dugout that kind of fires everybody up. You know, we talk about the Texas rivalry. I think for our players, I think there's something about that Tennessee colors and everything that kind of gets the guys fired up. You know, Tony mm-hmm. V in the dugout, he's always real fiery. Now you got Josh Elander over there kind of carrying on that tradition. I think there's just something about it. We just step up and we just always seem to play really well against Tennessee. And I think that's that's an awesome record. Phil mentioned it last night on the broadcast of how we've kind of dominated them over the last, you know, several years. And then that's good because that's a really good team. But, you know, I can't really explain, you know, why it is other than the fact that we just want to beat them. And with baseball being so mental, that all you need is that little mental edge. Mm-hmm. And that's enough to get you over the top sometimes.
Yeah, it had a different feeling last night with Vitello not being there. And, of course, you know, it wasn't on campus, and so that affects it a little bit too. Elander, obviously, he went there with Tony and used to be at Arkansas. He's just not Tony Vitello. And I mean that in, you know, just the way he carries himself. It's just totally different than Vitello. In fact, I remember I read something on him earlier this year, and it basically said that, you know, kind of the way he conducts himself, and I think this was how he even described it, and I'm talking about Elander described it, is he tries to conduct himself like Dave Van Horn, very, you know, poised in the dugout, and it's a different feel from Elander than it was from Tony.
Yeah, so you're saying Elander tries to say poised. Yeah, okay, because, poised and Vitello doesn't go in the same sense. I wouldn't describe him as being poised, but, yeah, you're right. And I think that's awesome to see that. You know, it was pretty cool in the broadcast last night. You know, they showed, like, Dave's coaching tree. You know, they showed Vitello, Wes Johnson, Elander, all up there on the screen. And I thought it was pretty cool. They talked about it abroad. Couldn't hear what they were saying, but on the broadcast, you could see where they were. You know, they had up on the screen. You might have been able to hear it where you were at. But thought that was pretty cool that they showed those guys. And they talked about it a couple times, you know, how, you know, these guys, you know, are all kind of, you know, they were raised under Dave Van Horn, and a lot of them take on his personality. So it's good to see Elander take on that personality versus, you know, the crazy man over there in the dugout going nuts on, you know, so it's good to see. But I think Josh does a really good job. I know the players like him. He's really good with the hitters. You know, you can tell with their hitting stats that they have. And I think he's going to eventually get that team back where they were, and they're going to be a force.
Looking at RPI here real quick, because, you know, everything is looked at now through the lens of what's going to happen in the NCAA tournament when that gets announced on Monday. That's 16 quad one wins for Arkansas now. Missouri State has actually moved back into a quad one win for Arkansas. It had fallen off their quad one record. And then Tennessee, that's a quad one win. You know, you look at the other teams right here, Bubba, in the RPI. There just aren't a whole lot of teams who have that many quad one wins. Georgia Tech's got 19. Auburn's got 17. I don't think anybody else has more than 16. So it's, you know, there are a lot of people who I'm trying to think how to say this. Tim Corbin, I was listening to his press conference yesterday after they lost to Florida in the game before Arkansas. And they asked him, you know, do you think you're one of the 64 best teams? And he said, yeah, I think we're one of the 64 best teams. He said, but, you know, there are ways the tournament puts this together where, you know, we may not be in, you know, get into the field. And I understand that. I think that's kind of where I fall on Arkansas and hosting right now, is that, are they one of the 16 best teams? I think right now, probably, you know, and you look at the national polls, they're anywhere from, like, I think 10 to 13 this week, but it's, I also understand how this is put together. It's a bigger body of work. I still have my doubts whether or not they can be a host, but I will tell you this. If they beat Texas, and let's say they beat Texas A&M or Auburn this weekend in a semifinal game, then I think you got to really start talking about them maybe sneaking in and grabbing that number 16 spot.
Yeah, I was watching reading Mark Etheridge.
Mm-hmm. You're good. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, you kind of beamed out on me a little bit. But, you know, reading Mark Etheridge, he still believes we have a path to it. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, Matt, the whole RPI thing to me is just, I don't get it, because look at where Georgia is RPI wise. Mm-hmm. What are they? I don't know where they're at now, but they were at 14.
They're number 14.
So, I mean, there's not 13 teams in the country better than them. I'm sorry. So that just goes to show you how flawed the RPI system is. And I don't know. It's a weird system. I still don't understand, and we talked about it last week, how in 2026 we can't find a system that puts the best teams where they need to be, because I agree with you. We definitely belong in that top 16 echelon, and I just don't know if it's going to happen or not.
You know, when I was talking to Mark Etheridge earlier this week, he said what the selection committee is going to do, or what they think the selection committee is going to do, because, again, this is the first year that they've used – that they've got a lot of the different, you know, criteria that they're trying to follow for the tournament this year. He said what he thinks they're going to do is they're going to look at all three of these metrics and look to see if there is an outlier. And right now, Arkansas is 16 in KPI. They are 16 in DSR. And there's not an official RPI out yet today, but Warren Nolan's RPI typically is a pretty good indicator of where they're going to fall. And they're 23 in RPI. So that is an outlier. And so, you know, it's one of those deals. Are they going to be treated as they're the 23rd best team? I don't think so. But are they going to be treated as their 16th, or are they going to be treated somewhere in between where all of these three metrics say? That's going to be the difference whether or not they're going to be hosting, I think.
Yeah, I think what we need to do is just go out and finish up strong here. Let's beat Texas. I think a win over Texas be huge, like you said. Whether it's A&M, Auburn, whoever we're playing that next game, we win those two games, I feel really good about it. I think we almost have to host if we do that. not sure what kind of RPI boost that'll give us, but I think that would give us, I think that'd put us in a good spot, would give us a legit case for it. And right now, I feel like we're kind of on the bubble. Everything I read, except for Mark Etheridge, has us as two seeds. So, you know, that's why I'm a big fan of Mark right now.
You do know Mark puts together the D1 baseball projections you read too, right?
Yeah. Well, okay.
Point that out to you. So, all right, Bubba, appreciate it. You can hear Bubba tomorrow night on the Razorback Sports, or I guess tomorrow afternoon on the Razorback Sports Network when Arkansas plays Texas. We're going to have a lot of coverage here from Hoover on WholeHogSports.com. Once again, our baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They're proudly family owned since 1976, trusted across Northwest Arkansas, committed to keeping you safe on the road all season long. Learn more or schedule service at H&RTireandAuto.com. Hey, also on our website, lots of super regional coverage. Arkansas softball getting ready to play Duke back at Bogle Park in the super regional this weekend. That ought to be a lot of fun too. Appreciate you being with us. We'll see you next time.